All right, John Dickinson and Matt Steinmetz, our Warriors weekly podcast, which is really a beyond weekly podcast at this point because it's the Western Conference semifinals. It's the Warriors and the Grizzlies. And Steiny, we've got a series, a competitive series now at 1-1. We've got a physical series. We've got a borderline dirty, or maybe even absolutely dirty playoff series. It feels like almost a mid-90s kind of a first two games of this one between the Warriors and the Grizzlies. So it's 1-1 coming back to the Bay. I was in Memphis for the first two games, and I think we got to start with Dylan Brooks flat out early on with the flagrant two against Gary Payton II, clubbed in the head. Payton goes to the floor, hits his elbow, winds up being a fracture. We don't know the extent of how long Payton's going to be out, but I think it's safe to assume he's going to be out for a while. And let's just get right into that play right there. Dirty, intentional. Should Dylan Brooks be suspended for another game now with the likelihood that Gary Payton's going to be out for a while?
I don't know if it was intentional or not. I don't think anybody knows. Was it dirty? Probably. Everybody seems to come down on the side that it was dirty. And as far as, you know, flagrant two, I just have a feeling he's going to get suspended for game three. I don't know about any more than that, but I feel like kind of with this climate that they're not going to want this series to escalate at all. So I think they may suspend Dylan Brooks for a game. But I'll tell you what, everything just got ramped up in a hurry. And that's what I think we thought this series was going to be. Not that there were going to be a lot of flagrant fouls, but I think we all knew it was going to get chippy. And I think we all knew, JD, because you and I have been talking about this, this series is going to go a long way to determine how much gas either of these teams has left for the next series. Because it looks like this series, regardless of who the winner is, it's going to take a toll on them.
Yeah, it's definitely going to take a toll on whoever wins it. I mean, I think just in the short term, having 3 days between game two and game three is probably something that both teams, especially the Warriors as the older team in this series, I think they like that and even need that at this point to just get home, regroup for a couple of days, and then figure out how they're going to have to proceed moving forward, potentially without Gary Payton II, who figured to play a huge role in this series. I mean, he was in the starting lineup, for crying out loud, in the first two games, and he was going to get a lot of the load against Ja Morant. And as the game plays out last night, not having Gary Payton II, it really mattered because Ja Morant got going in a way that he didn't get going in game one and took the game over in the big moments down the stretch. And that propelled the Grizzlies to the victory.
Warriors didn't have anybody who could keep him in front. They just didn't have anybody that could keep Ja Morant stay in front of Ja Morant. And the one thing we were talking about in this series, which I thought was going to be a key, was Memphis's athleticism on the wings, and then if they could handle Ja Morant. And I thought in game one, I mean, Morant at 34, but I think the Warriors take that every day of the week if it's going to be a 14 for 31, 4 for 11, and he only gets to the line three times. But last night, they didn't have any way to keep him in front. He was making that little floater. And you know, I'm a little bit surprised, to tell you the truth, because, you know, one of the things that we've seen with the Warriors during their successful run is it's really hard for one guy to beat them. And I kind of go back to the Harden years. And I kind of feel like that's what happened last night. Ja Morant, he beat him. And I don't think he can continue. I don't think they're going to allow him to continue to do that. So the question now becomes, will Ja Morant get enough help after this game too? Because the Warriors are too good defensively, even if Payton's not there, to not make an adjustment, try to get the ball out of his hands. I mean, maybe you got to try to play him like teams try to play Steph Curry and just get the ball out of his hands and see what the other four guys can do.
Yeah, I want to go back, and that's something that's going to be a key to this series throughout, is how do the Warriors now, potentially without Gary Payton, try to defend Ja Morant? And I think your point is excellent as far as, do the Grizzlies have enough in other areas? Because in long stretches of game one and two, really the theme, I think, of game one and two has been the Warriors hanging around, not shooting the three ball all that well. I mean, last night, my goodness, 7 for 38 from three. I mean, that's as big a story as what Morant did, as what happened with Gary Payton, as Draymond flipping off the fans. I mean, there's all kinds of things going on here in this series. But if the Warriors make two more threes, if they're 9 for 38 instead of 7 for 38, we're talking about the Warriors having this series on lock. 2-0 going home, even with everything else that's been going on. So I think the Grizzlies at times, to your point about Morant, haven't had enough offensively, even though they've done some other things to where I feel like they could have in some ways put the Warriors away in both games or extended to a lead that maybe the Warriors couldn't overcome in both games. But they just haven't been able to do it. A big part of that is the others offensively, Steiny. A big part of that is the fact that I think the way that the Grizzlies are defending the Warriors, they're taking away the three. They're really trying to make life difficult. But the Warriors have been able to hit them in ways that they don't usually hit teams on the interior, getting to the basket themselves, transition. I think there's been a lot of leaky coverages for the Grizzlies at the rim. I mean, the Warriors had 60 paint points last night, which is usually what Memphis does.
Right.
And Memphis hit 14 threes to the Warriors 7, which is usually what the Warriors do.
Yeah, I think that's the way the Grizzlies want to do it. I mean, probably not to that extreme, and they don't want to give up as many easy baskets. But clearly their strategy is to not let the Warriors make 15 threes in a game, or try not to let them make 15 threes in a game. You know, this is the one team, JD, where last night I was watching, and I can't remember the sequence. Maybe it was early in the fourth, where it felt like both teams were just running up and down as fast as they could, about four straight possessions, and nobody got anything done. Nobody scored.
Yeah.
And that's the first time that I thought, I don't think this is the way the Warriors want to play. Like, they love to get up and down, but they don't want to get up and down this way, because I think Memphis in transition on their defense, they recover so well that it kind of gives the illusion of a fast break, but they got guys flying all over the place. And what the Warriors have again last night, 18 turnovers, something like that. Yep. So there's no doubt the quickness and the length is presenting a problem for the Warriors. I don't know. What do you think about, you know, I guess what I'm saying is, if they can get out on clean, fast breaks, then the Warriors have a big advantage. But when it just kind of goes up and down, I think Memphis is more than happy to play that way.
No, I think they have to play that way to be able to score enough.
Yeah.
Because when it's gotten into the half court, the Warriors have been the better team in the half court, which again is something that's unusual for Warrior games and Warrior series. Typically the Warriors want to get out and hit the three ball in transition. And I think the Warriors have done a nice job, oddly enough, off of made baskets. It seems like the Grizzlies in this series have fallen asleep off of their own made baskets, and the Warriors have been able to come back quick and attack and answer, which I think is a big part of why there hasn't been a lot of separation in these games when there had the potential to be. So I'm with you on the Grizzlies wanting it to be that way. I think the Warriors want to not slow it down, but just, and you heard Steve Kerr talk about this, take better shots. I think the frenetic pace has baited the Warriors into trying to make the home run play a little bit, which leads to turnovers, which leads to Grizzlies opportunities on the other end, and also try to take the quick good shot, the quick open three. And I think when those aren't going, the Warriors are extremely vulnerable. Now, when those are going, they're almost unbeatable, and maybe there will be a game or two of the next 4 or 5, if this series goes the distance, where the Warriors are hot from three. That game hasn't happened yet, but I don't think the Warriors can live on, they're going to get hot from three, maybe in a game or two, but I don't think it's going to be enough to win three more games on that alone.
I think it's going to be hard for them to string together consecutive really good shooting nights from three-point range, just because Memphis seems to really be focusing on that, and I think they have the personnel that can bother the Warriors a little bit in terms of that part of their game. You know, the other thing that happens when you get fatigued or when you get a little older, and I don't know if that necessarily fits here or not, JD, but you know, late in a game, it's just so much easier to try to shoot a three than try to do the hard work of getting to the basket. And I wonder if that was part of the story last night, whether, you know, the Warriors were, you know, Clay played 41 minutes, JD. You know, I put something on Twitter about that. I mean, that's incredible. You know, he led the Warriors in minutes last night after not playing for about 30 months. And, you know, consequently, he didn't make a lot of threes, but neither he nor Steph, I really felt, forced the action with penetration. Sometimes penetration takes a lot of work, and maybe that was a factor in terms of them maybe settling for three-pointers.
Yeah, and look, Jordan Poole's been the one guy that consistently has been able to attack it. But you look, I mean, I think even Wiggins at times has been able to attack it a little bit. But I think the Warriors are a little caught in between, because there are some good looks from three. They are shots that when the Warriors are hot from deep, they make. And you're right, it makes the game a whole heck of a lot easier. But yeah, you just look at last night. I mean, the three-point shot is the entire story, with Clay 2 for 12. And, you know, I wonder what's going on with Clay physically a little bit now, because there was the knee that was deemed to be nothing by Steve Kerr and Clay Thompson yesterday at shoot around here in Memphis. And so, but yet he goes out and he plays, you know, the word was he was good to go. Well, he played like somebody that maybe wasn't good to go, but then he played 41 minutes. So,
right.
I mean, they needed him, I think, to play more because of the Peyton injury. And that's something that I think has the potential to take a toll. I want to go back to,
well, real quick, let me just throw another thing about the 3-point shot that, you know, we hear this a lot, JD, is, man, they missed a lot of open ones, and they did miss some good looks. But those good looks are harder in a close game than when you're up 7 and you know you knock down a 3 and now it's up to 10. So even open threes have far more consequence than they do in the regular season, or even when the Warriors are playing with the lead. They're just, the threes can be different depending on where you are in the game. And even though some, you know, I thought their shot selection was mediocre, but then they did have a couple that you'd figure they'd knock down. But those get tougher when you have to make them and you're not getting a lot of good looks.
No, I think. Defense a little bit, I think, and get some more efficient looks that way. I want to go back to the Dylan Brooks play at the beginning, because I think part of the conversation about intent is a lot of the talking that the Grizzlies did in between game one and game two about how they needed to be more physical. This was a huge storyline Monday and Tuesday leading up to it. I mean, Steve Kerr, I thought, even was trying to almost alert the officials in a low-key way with the way that he spoke about how he talked to the team, saying it was going to be the most physical game they played all season. And I felt in listening to Steve Kerr, who blasted Brooks post game, and obviously he's taken up for his guy, and he knows this really, it hurts Gary Payton's career, it hurts the Warriors in this series more immediately. But I think that's where you start to get into, you know, the Grizzlies pretty much talked about not wanting to get punked again,
right?
And it just wouldn't happen again. Is there anything there for you when you see, and I know you've covered a lot of these series where, you know, one team just kind of puts it out there, hey, we're coming at you, and then somebody comes at you in the first couple of minutes of the game, and it winds up leading to what we saw last night?
Well, I think the part about Kerr setting the table for a physical game is something that every coach does in the postseason. And I think we've seen we've already seen multiple coaches do it, whether it's Taylor Jenkins, whether it's Finch, or whether it's even Monty Williams in Phoenix. That having been said, when you talk about intent, The question is, did Dillon Brooks try to hurt Gary Payton II? And my answer would be no. He didn't try to hurt him, but clearly
he didn't care if he put him on the deck.
Correct. He sold out trying to take a hard foul, and it ended up hurting Gary Payton II. But I don't think he went up there saying, I'm going to hurt Gary Payton II. But, you know, Steve Kerr's been around the league for 30, 40 years. So if he said a code was broken, I'm kind of going to take his word for it. You know, to me, it's just so hard. These guys are moving so fast. And, you know, I'm certainly not going to come out today and say that wasn't a dirty play at all. But I don't think he wanted to hurt Gary Payton II. He just didn't care what happened. He was not going to allow the basket. So if that's just another way to sugarcoat, well, you know, he had bad intentions. Fair enough. But I don't think, you know, I just don't think he wanted to put Gary Payton II out for the rest of the series.
No doubt. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I also, the talk here in Memphis, and look, yeah. Dillon Brooks is basically the Grizzlies' Draymond Green.
Right.
Different skill set of player, but he runs hot, he gets technicals, he mixes it up with the officials. He's the most player most likely to be involved in the play, like last night with Payton II. But the conversation here in Memphis, and I was going back and forth with some Grizzlies people, was, well, you know, Draymond, like, it's no different than what Draymond did to Brandon Clark in game one. And it's just that the outcome of it is different because Payton got hurt and maybe Clark didn't. How do you parse through that? Because I think that's going to be a back and forth over the next couple of days, in addition to the question about should Clark get suspended. And I'm more inclined, just to put it on the table, I'm more inclined to think he is going to get suspended for game three, knowing that Payton is probably going to be out for the duration.
Yeah. I mean, maybe this isn't right, but the first thing I thought of after that play was when Zaza Pachulia came under Kawhi Leonard in 2017, the game one Western Conference Finals. And Kawhi was already a little bit labored, but when he came down on Zaza's foot, it was over for him. It was over for the series. And I mean,
over for his San Antonio career, essentially.
Exactly. And you know, I don't want to, but, you know, so that's a Western Conference Finals. They were up 25. The Spurs were up 25 points when that happened. So, you know, that's a play. And are people going to maintain that that play was not dirty, but but Dillon Brooks's was, you know, I don't know. I call them both careless plays, both reckless plays. But, you know, sometimes, I mean, this happens. And, you know, I remember a play, and I don't want to get into how many, but remember the play a couple years back when Draymond took an extremely hard foul on Valanciunas and broke his hand, and he missed 6 or 8 weeks. So, I think you're getting into a real dangerous area if you start thinking Dillon Brooks was trying to hurt Gary Payton II, because I really don't think any pro player wants to hurt another pro player.
All right, so where do the Warriors go from here? Our Warriors Weekly Podcast special post game two edition, John Dickinson and Matt Steinmetz, as I'm still in Memphis, going to be headed back to the Bay a little bit later this afternoon. Steiny in San Francisco getting ready for his show with Guru coming up in about 90 minutes or so. Where do the Warriors go from here, assuming they're not going to have Payton? He had been starting, so the natural progression there would be, all right, Jordan Poole, who started the second half in both games, Jordan Poole goes back into the starting lineup, and the Warriors play the Curry, Poole, Clay, Wiggins, and Draymond lineup from the start. One of the surprises of this series, among the many, the Warriors have held their own rebounding the basketball, yeah, even playing smaller, and have hit the Grizzlies how the Grizzlies usually hit other teams, and how the Grizzlies, I think, thought they were going to hit the Warriors in these first couple of games.
Yeah. And you know, I go back, I just think, you know, if the Warriors are going to take 40 threes a game and the Grizzlies are going to take a bunch of threes, you know, the height differential is going to be mitigated just because those rebounds are going to be long. I mean, you know, there've been a few sequences in the series already where a team's missed three straight three-pointers, and what happens? They all rebound long and the offense gets them. So
yeah,
it just happens more when teams are shooting three-pointers. The thing that, believe it or not, that raised my eyebrows last night was when Steve Kerr mentioned Andre Iguodala, that Iguodala is going to get looked at today. And I've just kind of assumed he's done. It's probably not fair, but I just feel like a neck injury. How the heck's he going to come back? But he talked about Iguodala almost like he could take some shots at Ja Morant defensively. And I wonder, I mean, I know Iguodala was a great defender in his day, but do you think he can keep Ja Morant in front of him? Because I think that's the challenge Wiggins has too. It's not, their length is only one of the nice things, but Morant's quickness is on another level.
I don't see it personally, especially right. If this is an Iguodala that's less than 100%. And look, the neck affects everything. Like if right. You got a neck issue, and I mean, that's, and so maybe it is a situation where, all right, let's see if, you know, the time is now. If Iguodala can play through it, and maybe Iguodala thinks he can play through it, well, let's find out in game three if he can play through it, because if he can't play through it, then we got to figure out what the heck we're going to do for the remaining games of this series if he can't play through it. So it's almost, in a way, Saturday's game three, and you're right, Steve Kerr sounded like he was basically telling everybody Iguodala is going to play, to me. And maybe some of that was to try and, you know, keep his team up in the aftermath of losing Peyton, like, hey, we've got an option, like all isn't lost. Iguodala is going to come back and help. So some of that maybe was psychology, but I also think, you know, game three is really the last game now. And look, the Warriors could have been up 2-0. If Ja Morant hits the layup, the Warriors could have been down 2-0. It ends up 1-1. And that's probably where it should be after the two games. With neither team up 2-0, I think we can fairly say that and objectively say that, especially with the 7-38 from three. But when you look at it, Steiny, I mean, game three is the last game that either team can really play with in a series. Once you get to game four, every game from that point has extreme ramifications.
Right, right. No doubt about it. And I'm looking at the Warriors roster, and I know there's some players that we probably thought weren't going to play much, but I assuming Iguodala is not himself, you know, I'm looking at their bench, and maybe the two best players most equipped to defend Ja are either Damian Lee or Toscano Anderson, believe it or not. But again, it's like, you know, Morant's like Curry. You're not going to shut him down. You got to turn him into a volume shooter. So I thought that was an issue before the series, who could match up with Ja Morant. And after two games, I think it's the single biggest issue. How can the Warriors slow down Ja Morant? Because even when he's not playing well, he's probably going to get in the high 20s by accident. So how do you make him into an 11 for 26? That's what they got to try with 3 for 8 from 3-point range. Keep him off the line. That's a recipe to win.
So if Wiggins is going to guard Durant, do you maybe see Draymond on Durant on Morant a little bit? I don't think
he can cover him.
I mean, and I don't think you can cover him without getting in foul trouble.
Right.
I'll say that.
The other thing that happened too a little bit last night was, you know, Morant, and I know it's only one more, but, you know, Morant was 5 for 12 from 3-point range, and the makes were spread out more. In game one, he made two early and he was done. You know, he made two more the rest of the game. And I thought he was really good at knowing when he was getting that three and it was wide open, that one at the top of the circle. Like there were times when I thought he assessed correctly and he was like, there's just nowhere to go. But if I back up, I have an open three. And he made enough last night, I thought.
No, he did. He made, and it was, the difference between 4 for 12 and 5 for 12. But you're right. It was a it felt like they were better shots.
Definitely.
And fewer forces, I think, right, as well. And so you look at that standpoint, and then the other difference was the 12 free throws. I mean, that was the
exactly.
I mean, that's how he went from 34 to – he had two free throws in the first one. That's how he goes from 34 to 47, you know, plus the one three-pointer there. So, yeah, I think it's interesting. If Wiggins is on Morant, then how does that change now the way the Warriors defend others, and does that lead to maybe some more open looks for others or more of an opportunity for the interior? Because I thought the other issue in game two was it was the fact that, you know, Jaren Jackson Jr., you know, he was in foul trouble, and I think the Warriors can get him in foul trouble, but does it create a situation where if Wiggins has got to guard Morant, do the Warriors have enough now size on the back end to prevent Jaren Jackson from being a factor in the paint? He really wasn't last night, the 3 for 14, but I think that's another potential issue, is the domino effect of now you don't have Peyton to really set the tone against Morant, and do you get a little leaky in other spots?
You know, I think Jaren Jackson Jr. is a low priority for the Warriors. Obviously, in game one, he made threes, and that impacted the game. I don't think last night he was much of a factor. But the issue I think Memphis is going to have as the series moves on is who's their second scorer. I mean, you look, you know, last night it was Zaire Williams.
Yeah, incredibly, and hit big threes. I mean, his
really
threes
did.
Were the game. In a lot of ways.
He played pretty well against the Warriors, I want to say, in the regular season, too.
And defensively, he's another long body.
Exactly.
They've thrown at Curry a little bit, and they
yeah.
can throw at a different...
And he didn't play game one.
Right.
So that he is an extra lengthy body, and maybe he got so many minutes because Brooks didn't play. But who's going to be... You know, if Morant's going to go 13 for 30, is there going to be somebody who can step up and get him 22? Bain is that guy sometimes. He looks like, you know, his back may be getting to him. Dylan Brooks obviously has only played one game after the ejection. He didn't make any shots. So they're still gonna need another player to emerge. Because Morant, I don't think you can't beat the Warriors this way over a series.
Yeah, let's close it out this way, because I think, you know, 1-1, and we talked about, hey, both teams could be up 2-0, but 1-1 is where it sits. I would think that the Warriors would feel really good about the 1-1 if it didn't already feel like this series has taken a toll on them physically. There was a point mid-fourth quarter, I think you touched on it earlier, where there were, you know, multiple possessions consecutively that were misses, and the game just kind of played on. I thought the Warriors were exhausted at the end of the game. I think that played a role as to why a couple of shots maybe rimmed out here or there, or Morant was able to get just another half inch on a shot here or there. I thought the Warriors were exhausted. Ordinarily, I'd say 1-1 coming home. Warriors are in great shape. I think if they were healthier, I'd feel like, hey, the Warriors have got action here, because they haven't played as well offensively in terms of shooting the three ball as they normally would. That's going to come around. Your point on the Grizzlies not having maybe as many options, I'd feel like the Warriors are 1-1 and in control a little bit. The Peyton injury and the physical toll that this series
right.
has taken, the Grizzlies are younger, they're more athletic, they're willing to bang. I feel more uneasy from the Warriors' point of view now than I think I would if they were a little bit more whole going into this thing. I think the Warriors in the 3 days off helps, but I think they're a little vulnerable now toward maybe the Grizzlies getting on a little bit more of a roll in one of or maybe both of the games in San Francisco.
Can the Grizzlies stay kind of as nasty as they were in Memphis in San Francisco? I mean, that's really what they're going to have to do. And sometimes the crowd can get a team to not play that way like they did in Memphis. But I do think that like Memphis is, they're young and they're not the smartest team in the NBA, but they definitely have a lot of willpower. And I don't think they're going to go away. I think they feel like, like they kind of play the same way every game. You know, we're going to try to get into people defensively out in the perimeter. We're going to try to, you know, we got a point guard who can take over a game, and we got 3-point shooters who can make some shots. I think they feel like they can, I feel like they think if they can stop the Warriors 3-point attack, maybe not 7 for 38, but, you know, keeping it at a modest number, then Morant and their 3-point shooting is going to be enough to win the series. And it might be. I mean, if we're looking at this series and it's like, wow, Poole shot 31% from three, Curry 33, and Clay 35, they're going to lose the series, I think.
Yeah.
And, so they got to make shots.
And I think that's the big change where things ease for the Warriors is if they can have a game or two where they just hit 15. 16 3-pointers, because the way that the Grizzlies have played in this series, they've shown they can't keep up if the Warriors are going to be able to have a couple of games like that. All right, Steiny, great stuff, my man. I'm about to head back to the Bay here, so we'll talk to you soon. Have a great show with Guru, and we'll do this again after game 3. Looking forward to it.
All right, buddy. Take care.
Later.